As President Trump vows to change course from the Obama years, cities in Florida look to an evolving relationship with Cuba. We're talking about it just ahead. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Never miss a show. Get the podcast by downloading the WJCT app and listen anytime. You can also stream the audio of this show live right now on our Facebook page. Just ahead, it's an upcoming trade mission to Cuba as Jacksonville business leaders head to the communist island nation next week. What do you think about that? Give us a call, 549-2937. Also, how local parents in Jacksonville can become more active in their children's public schools. We'll tell you about a special workshop and the Spectator with some ideas for your Easter and Passover holiday weekend, all of that and more ahead. But first this hour, a group of local business leaders plans to fly to Havana, Cuba next week. Their goal is to begin reestablishing the old business ties that were lost in the days of Fidel Castro and the longstanding U.S. embargo against the communist country. Now, years ago, you might not have known this, but some 90% of U.S. shipping to and from Cuba went right through Jacksonville's port. President Barack Obama's administration, of course, worked to open up tourism and trade with Cuba, but that's a policy President Donald Trump has vowed to reverse. So what can this delegation accomplish given the politics around Cuba? Well, right now we're taking a closer look as we welcome former Jacksonville City Councilman Eric Smith. He's one of the delegation heading to Havana. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having us on.
Good to have you. Also in studio, an expert on Cuba, longtime diplomat John Caulfield. He headed the U.S. mission in Havana for the State Department for many years. He's now retired and calls Jacksonville home. John, always good to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks, Melissa. Happy to be here.
And here's our question to callers. What do you think about President Donald Trump changing course on the Obama administration's Cuba policy, which has opened up tourism in particular to Cuba? And what are your questions for this local delegation heading to Cuba? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Weigh in on Facebook. Okay, so Eric Smith, a former city councilman, you and several other business people are heading to Havana next week, a people-to-people and educational trip to meet with their senior leadership, discuss Jacksonville's interest in developing more business with Cuba. What all is on the agenda for this trip?
Melissa, a lot of good things, but basically, we want to plant the flag for Jacksonville to tell the officials that we meet, and I can share some of those are, to tell them that Jacksonville is the largest in both population and land area here. It's a business city, and that business people here want to develop the relationship we had from 1895 when Jacksonville and Napoleon Bonaparte Broward, those people were heroes to the Cuban Revolution. Jose Marti actually came here and spoke at our El Modelo factory. And then all the way up until 1959, lots of activity between business people, regular citizens, and Havana and Cuba. And by golly, we want to reestablish that went away in 1959 when they had to close the Cuban consulate, which was right here in Jacksonville.
And in fact, you learned it was on Pearl Street in Springfield. Interesting to note that. Let me ask you as a follow-up. President Trump has vowed to reverse the Obama administration's policies of opening up relations and tourism and trade with Cuba. And it's been really marked to note how Jacksonville business and political leadership is not following in the lead of, say, the Tampa and Orlando leadership in trying to get things going with Cuba. They're really of the same mindset with President Trump, that we need to continue to take a hard line with Cuba. So given the politics around this, Eric, how much can this delegation accomplish? And it's my understanding you even had trouble getting visas to travel because of the politics of this. What about all that?
Well, Melissa, I just don't ever believe in giving up. I do believe that Jacksonville There's a lot of business for us. There's a lot of things that could happen between Jacksonville and Cuba. Not instantly. We're not going to bring back an order. We're not going to bring back, for example, a lot more than is happening now. You'd be surprised how many business people in Jacksonville are already trading there, and I can give you names, selling lumber and all of the things that are legal now. But we tried for 2 years to get visas, and I have a witness, Your Honor, that will testify to that.
let's bring in John Caulfield, the State Department's man in Cuba for many years. And we're so lucky to have you here on the First Coast now and provide your insight into Cuba. What about the difficulties this delegation has gone through just to even undertake this mission? And what can they expect when they get there?
Well, one thing just to note is that the Trump administration, although during the campaign there were inconsistent declarations, it has been silent other than to say that the policy is under review. And there's no indication of when the new administration will come out. So far, the Obama policies have not been reversed and no new policies have been announced. So we're operating under the same guidelines that we had prior to January 20th.
Well, John, can I just jump in with a footnote, because you're on a great roll here, but I ask Al Fox, he's a former congressional aide, he's the president of the Alliance for Responsible Cuba Policy Foundation in Tampa. He's the guy that's arranged all of this for us. I said, is President Trump going to ruin everything that's happened? And his answer was pretty short. He says, I don't think so, he said, because that genie is too far out of the bottle. Too many good things are happening now. And frankly, Trump has too many friends that own the airlines and the ships and all of those things that are interacting
with
Cuba. What
do you think, John?
Well, I really hesitate to predict anything that our president would do. He's difficult to anticipate. But I think certainly the idea of Americans being more able to travel to Cuba is something that is very popular. And I think there would be congressional sentiment against doing something like that. The other thing is that the permission of Cuban Americans to support their relatives in Cuba that was greatly expanded in the Obama administration, that's going
to
be
they're more able to send money now,
right,
and things like that.
Right, yes, much easier. Yeah. And then finally, the trade that is allowed for food, telecommunications and medical equipment, that is legislation. So you'd have to change the law to do that. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. And we'll go to your calls about the upcoming local trade delegation to Cuba next week. The number to join us and let us know what you think about this administration's policy on Cuba and the local efforts to reestablish ties, particularly business ties. The number to call is 549-2937. Now, in addition to our expert, John Caulfield, who, by the way, if anyone is looking to book John Caulfield to talk about Cuba, we have a world-class expert right here in Jacksonville. It's quite amazing. Former State Department man in Cuba, John Caulfield. You need to snag that. But in the meantime, I want to also play a little sound from another expert on Cuba. This is so interesting, too. She's local philanthropist Betsy Lovett, a legendary local lady with strong ties to Cuba. Betsy and her late husband, Billy, first went to Cuba in 1953, and they spent several years in Havana in the 50s. And she spoke with you, Eric, on your cable program, People and Politics. Here's what she reminisced about when it came to her time in Cuba.
I've never been back, and Billy never went back, but I know we used to talk and say, of all the places we've been, I mean, I've been blessed. He traveled a lot, and I had the experiences of going with him many, many places around the world. And we always felt it was one of the most glamorous, beautiful ones at that time that we had ever really seen.
There's such a fascination with Cuba and such a nostalgia, Eric, from people who remember what it was like before the revolution. And there seems to be this sentiment to try to... For at least some Americans feel that they want to play a part in a Cuban renaissance, if that's in the cards.
Certainly that's happening, and particularly in cities in Florida like Tampa. And Al Fox took the Tampa port people down there. He took recently the Pensacola people from their port down to Cuba. And it's... It's something that's coming. It's like a slow wave. It's building, and New Orleans establishment has been down there, a number of the states, and I just hate to see Jacksonville stay behind the eight ball. I think there's a feeling somewhere that that if we engaged with Cuba, the governor would cut off the money for dredging at our
port.
You
think that's affecting the local politics around this?
I think so. I think
so. What do you think, John?
Well, it's interesting that we've had some high-profile trips from several governors to Cuba to promote their commercial interests, the governor of Alabama, the governor of Texas, the governor of Arkansas. And the Cubans are comfortable with this. They don't have private sector people making purchases. They're government officials. And it seems to have worked. Particularly Arkansas, for example, just benefited from the recent announcement of a very large rice purchase from Arkansas, the first in several years. So clearly, that's a way to get the attention of the Cubans, to get your political leadership to go down with the trade delegation.
Let me ask you, Eric Smith, given that there's this, in your view, fear or concern that if Jacksonville weighs in too heavily in a pro-Cuba fashion, we might face retaliation in some kind. Jacksonville is the only major Florida city that seems to be differing from this sentiment that it's time to establish ties with Cuba. So given that the political and business elite here are hanging back, what can you accomplish looking at these political headwinds right now?
Well, in the first place, Melissa, any whether it's a governor or a U.S. senator like U.S. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, port people from Pensacola or from or the Orlando and Tampa airport people that have been there, any of them that expect a miracle to happen immediately, that's not going to happen. But when you want to trade with any country, you have to engage with that country. And frankly, I think that's what Jacksonville needs to do. And by the way, let's suppose they don't get their dredging, that they don't get that $1 billion and make that happen. We can do business with Cuba right now. And as a matter of fact, some of that is happening with Crowley Marine here, a great company that operates from Jacksonville and Florida and so forth.
Okay, and lots of calls as we talk about a local trade delegation setting off next week for Havana, Cuba. What are your questions as we discuss this with former Councilman Eric Smith and former State Department official John Caulfield? Give us a call, 549-2937. Ed is in Orange Park. Hi, Ed. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Something I'm a little bit familiar with. The thing to be careful is that when you deal with something like Cuba, which is rather unique, even if you compare it to China, which a lot of people tend to compare, why we do business with China, why not Cuba? In China, as an example, an American investor or an American business from Jacksonville can go meet a Chinese individual and do business with them directly. There's a lot more differences on property rights. Also, you can go to China anywhere and hire anybody you meet in the street to work, let's say, in your hotel or your restaurant, just like you do if you were in London or in Mexico City. You cannot do that in Cuba. You cannot do any private business with any Cuban citizen. You can only do it with the Cuban government. That's different than China. And you cannot hire your employees, assuming you open some kind of business in Cuba, directly from the streets. You have to hire them through a government pool where then you, the foreign investors, have to pay the government secretly in dollars. The government turns around and gives like 5% of the money to the Cuban employee that is working for you. I have debated the Cuban government official right there in Jacksonville. Eric is familiar with this a few years ago. And I asked him a very simple question. Why don't you allow the investor to pay directly the employees their full salary?
Right.
And you simply show your tax rate's 95%.
Okay. Yeah.
That's fine. That's not your fault.
Thanks, Ed. Okay. And Ed's talking about the complexities of the doing this type of stuff in Cuba. Thanks for that call, Ed. John Caulfield, former State Department official in Cuba, in Havana. What about that?
Well, that's correct. If you're an investor and you set up operations and you hire people, he's absolutely right. You have to hire through a Cuban government employment agency. Now, there are small businesses in Cuba. There are restaurants or taxi cabs or, you know, painters or artists of different types that you can hire as an individual. And these people you can sell to by our laws. However, Cuba has a monopoly. The government has a monopoly on all imports. So you are stuck going through the government, and that's mm-hmm. correct.
You've talked on this program before about how you believe that the senior leadership in Cuba, the comandantes, right. there's a whole tier of civil servants, bureaucrats, that as long as they're there, the change is going to be slow, right?
Well, the leadership of Cuba, the real leaders, are in their 80s. And there's a 30-year age gap between that generation. There's only four or five of those left. And the next generation, who are 30 years younger. And so we really don't know what that next generation is going to be like. But they see the world differently than those who fought the revolution.
And Eric Smith, and you're speaking to that sentiment when you take this trip, right?
Of course, we are. We don't expect amazing things to happen, but what we know will happen is that we'll meet senior officials from the Foreign Ministry of Cuba. We'll meet a former longtime advisor to the president of Cuba about economics, and we'll meet officials from the Ministry of Commerce and Agriculture, and that's very important. But you know, Ed is right about let the buyer beware when you go to a country like Cuba. But there's no magic in China. I know an American businessman works in Jacksonville that had to leave China pretty fast because he found out they were going to arrest him because a lawsuit had been filed by one Chinese company against his company. So everywhere you go, everywhere in the world, you have to look out.
And it's 549-2937. Mike is driving through downtown Jacksonville. Hey, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. I love this show.
Thanks.
It's a great topic. So just have two questions, really. The first one is with regards to the visa issues. My brother and mother just did 10 days in Cuba. They got back literally 2 weeks ago and didn't have any problems getting visas. I've got another friend who's leaving on a kind of a photojournalism tour of Cuba in a couple of weeks. And again, no problems getting a visa there. It seems to be that visas to Cuba are actually pretty easy to get. They seem to be very interested in having us there. So I'm interested in what problems y'all are having getting them. The second one is, I'd like to know a little bit more about maybe the Jacksonville personal connection with Cuba. You know, what are we looking to have happen? I don't really take seriously the whole dredging thing because I really find it hard to believe that they would scuttle a billion-dollar project over something like this, really, especially when the other big cities of Florida are already engaged very heavily in relationships with Cuba. So I'd like to maybe hear a little bit more comment about what our trajectory is with Jacksonville and Cuba. What are we looking
yeah.
to get? What do we have? And whatnot. So
okay.
both of those issues. Thanks, and I'll listen off the air. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, Mike, keep both hands on the wheel there in downtown Jacksonville.
They got the hands-free calling now, right?
Oh, that's right. I occasionally use that. But we didn't want an ordinary visa. Ordinary
right.
visas
yeah.
are easy to get.
That you can, can't you get them for $50 at the airport in Miami now?
Yeah, if you're yeah. going for any of the U.S. authorized purposes for cultural, people-to-people, religious, et cetera,
yeah.
You can just get a tourist card at the airport.
And you're off.
But
yeah.
if you want to have business appointments, you have to get a business visa through the Cuban embassy. And
that's where you ran into trouble, Eric?
Yep. Every
okay.
time I tried to access the Cuban, I went to Washington one time uninvited and managed to meet a low-level person at the embassy. They were very nice to me, but I was never able to get through the top, not even with my letters. But working through the Alliance for Responsible Cuba Policy, Al Fox, who has taken U.S. senators and other people and entities down there, we got that because this visa means not only can we meet with some business people, but it opens the door for meetings with the foreign minister, with the people in Cuba, high-level officials that do business, and we want to tell them about Jacksonville and the historic relationship we had and what a great city it's going to be, and the logistical correctness of Jacksonville for doing shipping and other kinds of business.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, before the revolution, 90% of all U.S. shipping to Cuba went through Jacksport. 90%. Not only that, Eric told us this morning that the Cuban consulate was located in the 1600 block of Pearl Street on the east side of the street. So Springfieldites, one of you living on Pearl Street in the 1600 block on the east side of the street, your home was the Cuban consulate until 1959. So let me ask you, Mr. Caulfield, Cuba's a poor country. That's not stopping U.S. CEOs like the ones going down with Eric Smith from trying to drum up business down there. But what will be the biggest barriers they'll face as they try to increase trade and business with Cuba?
Well, I think you put your finger on it. Cuba doesn't have a lot of resources, and so they're limited in what they can buy. They need everything. We also have still have limitations on what we can sell. But despite those limitations, there's still a market, particularly for any agricultural products, which goes anything from raw lumber to Hershey's chocolate bars. And as the tourism business grows in Cuba, they have a need to import higher quality and more food, and that's opening up opportunities. And then there are other areas for which you can apply for licenses, even if it's not currently approved. And companies that have sales products prospects can do that.
Tom in Arlington. Go ahead, Tom.
I was wondering whether Shad Khan has been contacted about his interests in perhaps helping the Cuba initiative, because he's our most prominent internationalist in the city and also happens to be close to Trump. So I just was wondering whether they had had conversations with Mr. Khan.
Thanks for that question.
That brings up an interesting question. Tom, what a great voice you have. Were you ever on the radio? But that's another subject. We have an indirect way to get through to Shad Khan, who is one of the greatest things that's ever happened here in Jacksonville. It has done amazing things internationally for us. But Betsy Lovett is good friends with Shad Khan, and we are working together on a documentary about the historic relationship between Jacksonville and Cuba and things that could happen in the future. We hope it'll be on PBS. It will feature Betsy, and Betsy wants to talk to Shad about that. He's not the easiest guy to get through
yeah.
to. Either.
Yeah, we actually have very close experience with that ourselves in trying to book him for interviews. We did get him once, though.
But Shad's going to be involved, and thank you for that question, Tom.
That's a great question. And by the way, for our video camera that's in here shooting you guys today, could you hold up this copy of a book you're going to bring as a little Goodwill gift? It's a Spanish language version of The Lorax by Dr. Seuss. Why are you bringing that to Havana?
Well, one thing is that I happened to find it, and it just dawned on me that I'm probably going to meet a little child there that would like that book, and there are probably not thousands of these in Cuba. And we're also going to take some other kinds of gifts from Jacksonville for the public officials that we meet. And these contacts are going to be invaluable. One of those things that I hope to reconnect is my relationship with Gustavo Machin. We had, and Tom actually helped me do this, something called Cuba, the New Realities, which was a symposium at the Center for Strategic Governance, which I directed. This happened about 12 years ago, and we got the first Cuban official to come to the center and speak to us at that. And I'd like to reboot that relationship, and he is now. He was just then kind of a low-level guy in the embassy in Washington, but now he's one of the five most influential people in the Cuban government, and he's a former Cuban ambassador to Pakistan.
Oh, okay. Well, and let me read this quick email from James. As the son of a Cuban mother, I feel that President Trump, a businessman first, will open up business negotiations with Cuba, but I am always concerned about Cuban families with rationed food, no free speech and liberties, and Cuban business controlled by a dictatorship that is communist. John Caulfield, what are your final thoughts about these realities?
Well, Cuba is a repressive government. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's one of the most repressive in the world. And I think the real issue is, are things that we're doing going to have an impact on ordinary Cuban people? Will it have a positive impact? And it's true, the government is in a position to get the lion's share of most economic benefits, but that's true whether we trade with them or not. And the other thing to remember is this is really a discussion we need to have about the future of Cuba, what's going to happen in the next 3 or 4 years, not what happened 55 years ago.
Keep us posted. In the meantime, fascinating to speak with both of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
Former City Councilman Eric Smith leading the delegation to Cuba. We were also joined in studio by former State Department official John Caulfield, who headed the U.S. mission in Havana and now lives here in our area. Much more still ahead. Later, The Spectator with some ideas for your weekend. But up next, education equity, getting more local parents involved in their children's schools. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Florida Eye Specialists is committed to providing the latest technology with an emphasis on compassionate patient-centered treatments and dedicated to delivering excellence in eye care. FloridaEyeSpecialist.com or 564-2020 for a consultation.
On Friday, we successfully completed our spring radio drive, in which we celebrated the 45th anniversary of public radio here on the First Coast. In the process, we secured more than 100 brand-new sustaining donors. A very special thank you to our new supporters. Giving, however, is not limited to just the week of the drive. I encourage those who didn't do it last week to do so today. Click on the support tab at wjct.org or call 353-9528.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, is this a rhetorical question or an ultimatum?
Russia has really aligned itself with the Assad regime, the Iranians, and Hezbollah. Is that a long-term alliance that serves Russia's interest?
Tough talk from an administration accused of being too close to Russia. Will they be cozy or confrontational? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Or the next Jazz Night in America, piano giant Randy Weston at 90. And I get to hang out with him at his Brooklyn home.
My mother gave me the black shirts, so I had Panamanian father and a Virginia mama. I'm born in Brooklyn with all the Caribbean and African and all the different people in Brooklyn, you know. So the culturally, it was very rich.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, one of the keys to success in public schools is strong parental involvement, but not all parents know how to go about that. Not only that, parents of African-American kids often deal with the issue of their children facing more frequent and harsher discipline in class. In fact, the data is overwhelming. It shows that teachers are more likely to be extremely punitive with children of color, even if their infractions are minor. A workshop is coming up on Saturday to inform parents what they can do to improve their children's educational experience. Dalu Sekou, president, and Lauren Cephas, vice president of the Black Commission, are here with more. Good to see you. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
All right, let's begin with you, Dalu. What is the Black Commission?
So the Black Commission is a 501c4. It is an advocacy group that is geared towards advocating political, economics, education, and medical for the Black community in Jacksonville, Florida, and also around the country. We have other chapters set up also as well.
Okay. And one of the things you're working on is this idea of education equity. Lauren, let's define what that is. When we talk about education equity, what does that mean?
What that means is that all students have access to the same curriculum and, to the same curriculum and learning information. The same, no matter what the school system is or all the way across the board that meet all of the standards and requirements according to the Department of Education.
Sure. And so the whole idea of this workshop, which you're having on the 15th, is to educate parents, get them more involved, and also make them aware of what their rights and responsibilities are.
Exactly.
So what are some of the topics that are going to be covered?
Some of the topics that we're going to be covering are school ratings. Discipline in regards to like how to handle discipline with your children, a checklist for parents, things that they want to pay attention to in regards to prior to entering school, during their school experience, and post and pre-graduation. Mm-hmm. And also looking at, you really want to pay attention to how to advocate for your child overall. Mm-hmm. Inevitably, it's the parent's responsibility on how their children learn. And that their children do learn, regardless of, you know, what school they go to. It's always important for the parent to ensure that their children have the information that they need.
And I think that's especially important for parents of color, because the data proves out that young African-American kids, particularly the boys, tend to face harsher punishments, yes. more demerits, more detentions, more out-of-school suspensions, more expulsions, for small infractions that don't net the same level of punishment if it's a white kid.
Exactly.
And let me ask you about that. Mm-hmm. Is that going to come up in terms of how parents can talk to a school administration about this?
Yes, we cover the board when it comes to those issues. And those issues were probably more prominent in about the late 80s by education doctor by the name of Dr. Juwanza Kanjufu, who wrote a book, Counter Conspiracy, Destroy Black Boys, where he mentioned about basically where we're at since then. But in this country, you have 83% of all public school teachers, white females. If the black population is 12 to 13%, the majority of or half of the population are black people in the school system. So where are the rest of the people? So there's a culture shock. There's an issue of wanting to teach those who look like them, who don't understand the things that are background that they come from.
Right. There can be such a disconnect. And it's my understanding, too, that when they go in and they show the white female teachers the data and this sort of implicit bias, they're taken by, they don't realize how stark the difference is. There is. And so, in addition to talking to the parents about this, you're going to talk to them about school choice, yes. too. Yes. How's that going to come up?
We're going to have an actual staff member from one of the local schools that's going to talk about school choice and what that looks like, how there's a variety of school avenues in which you can take. And the problem is, I know parents, a lot of parents are against school choice. However, it's not going anywhere. So we want to really help them understand how to navigate, how to choose an appropriate school, and the school grades correlate with that as well, so the parents can understand which schools are performing academically well. And then also one of the things that we forgot to mention is that IEPs will be discussed as well, and how a parent can ask for an evaluation for their child, what that looks like, also how to
And an IEP is an individual education plan,
exactly.
right? Is that that's exactly. what that stands for?
Yes. And then also sometimes parents go into these meetings in IEP and there's a lot of professionals in the room and are very confused about what's happening.
And intimidating.
And intimidated, exactly. Mm-hmm. And they're not sure what to do. So we are going to actually discuss how to go through that process and also make sure that they understand that they can have an advocate with them mm-hmm. to go through the process.
Okay, so this is coming up on the 15th, yes. a parental education support workshop. How can people be part of those?
This address.
It's located at the Branham Brooks Library at 1755 Edgewood Avenue West. And it starts at 11 o'clock, ends at 2 p.m. We are going to have some speakers. We have Karen Luland from the Duval PTA will be there to speak as well. And one of the things she's going to be speaking about is making sure the parents know what their role is within the school system. We have another teacher that's going to be there to speak about what expectations are from his standpoint in regards to parents and how they can develop a team. So that's how the community can be involved. And then also we're going to try to provide resource information of after-school programs, which the parents can have their children involved in once school is over, because we do know that there's a lot of children that don't really have anything to do after school, in addition to homework, of course. but they don't have anything to do, and sometimes that's where a lot of the crime, juvenile issues begin to happen. So we want to make sure that they have information on those resources as well.
All right. Important workshop, a free workshop for parents. From the Black Commission, this is the Parent Education Support Workshop coming up Saturday, 11 to 2 at the Bradham Books Library on Edgewood. Dalu Sekou, President, Lauren Cephas, Vice President of the Black Commission. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Don't forget to donate to the public radio station.
That's right.
Don't forget that.
That's right. You can still do that, by the way,
always.
Even though our pledge drive is over. And go to WJCT.org to do that. Thanks, guys. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
On the next Fresh Air, Saturday Night Live cast member Sasheer Zamata. She has a new comedy special. Also, New Yorker writer David Owen talks about high-tech innovations for hearing loss, playing golf with Donald Trump, research for an article, and how the Colorado River is drying up from overuse. It's the subject of his new book, Where the Water Goes. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele inviting you to join us this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion from the Pasadena Convention Center with our guests Ryan Adams, Casey Musgraves, Justin Hurwitz, Mr. Kevin Nealon, also the Royal Academy of Radio Actors, Tim Russell, Serena Brooke, and sound effects man Fred Newman, of course. Ms. Aoife O'Donovan will be there. My Song of the Week and much, much more, all right here.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sit back, relax, and travel back in time with 89.9 on Sunday nights beginning at 7 with Radio Theater.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Doo-wop Revival.
Good evening, I'm Glenn Fisher, the king of the doo-woppers.
Relax Radio. Throwback Sunday, Sunday nights beginning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. Online at WJCT.org. Looking forward to looking back.
Today's segment with Carrie Speckman is brought to you in part by Blue Bamboo Asian Kitchen.
Welcome back. It's a funny new musical about a composer whose life is thrown into crisis after a medical emergency. A New Brain, the musical, opens next week at Jacksonville's Five and Dime Theater. Executive Director Lee Hamby and cast member Rodney Holmes are here to tell us more. Hey, guys.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
And, of course, the Five and Dime located downtown now on Adams Street. Very exciting.
Very exciting.
You're going to bring people into the urban core for a new play. It's called A New Brain. What's it all about, Lee?
Actually, I'm going to let Rodney tell you because he's a part of it.
Okay. Rodney, you're in the show. Who do you play?
I play the minister in the show. So
okay.
The entire show takes place in a hospital, and I'm sort of the on-staff minister.
Like the hospital chaplain?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And so this composer, he collapses and is rushed to the hospital?
Yeah, he's having lunch and he's working. He works on a children's show writing music, and he collapses straight into his plate of scallopini and is rushed off to the hospital, where he sort of finds out that he needs a new brain.
A new brain?
Yeah. Hence the name.
Is that medically possible? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
So,
I don't know. That's a good
never come across it.
So what attracted you to this show for the Five and Dime?
I have always loved this show. William Finn wrote it, and he's written some other shows that I really have loved and fell in love with it. And I always thought that it was a good show for us to do because it was a smaller musical. And we had not been able to do musicals being a nomadic theater company because it's kind of hard to travel with a musical, with a band and everything. So once we got our new home, we were like, this has to be the first musical that we do in the space. So we are very, very pleased to be able to do it.
Okay. So Rodney, you're singing and dancing in this production?
Yes, ma'am.
What's that like?
It's been great. The music is beautiful in the show. It's some of the most beautifully written music I've come across in my performance career. And the entire cast has such stunning voices that rehearsals are a treat.
Excellent. And this is fulfilling the Five and Dime's mission to bring really cutting-edge theater to the urban core of Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And also premieres. We really like to premiere shows in the area as well. And this is definitely a premiere, if not for the whole state of Florida, definitely for the Northeast Florida.
Yeah, and this is from Tony Award winners William Finn and James Lapine?
Lapine. Yeah.
Okay, so this is premiering not this weekend, but next weekend.
Next Friday the 21st through May 7th. We also have a special Pay What You Want night, which is also an interpreted night.
A sign language person.
Yes, yes.
And that's on Monday night?
On Monday night, the 24th. So each show that we do a Monday, that first Monday of that first week that we do it is always a Pay What You Want. So we want to make it accessible to everyone.
So it's like WJCT during our pledge drives.
Absolutely.
We just say give whatever you
absolutely
can give.
If you can give a dime to
the Five and Dime,
yep,
you will literally take a dime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You don't have to pay anything if you don't want to. If you really cannot afford to pay anything and you need to come see this, we'd love for you to come. But if you have $1 million check in your pocket, we would also like for
yeah,
you
it's
to.
Not, it doesn't say pay what you need or pay what you should. It says pay what you want.
Yes.
So people could pay a lot if they want. And
really, people are usually very generous, and we make around the same amount that we would do regular people.
Isn't
you know,
that nice?
It is. It's very cool.
And what's this theater space like? It's on Adams Street, downtown, 112 East Adams.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like?
It's a very intimate space. It seats about, 80?
80.
80
mm-hmm.
people. Seats are on the floor. It's a raised stage, and you're right up next to the audience when you're performing. And it's just great because you get to feel their energy. And you get to give them yours, and you can mess with them and look at them.
And we use the aisle, so mm-hmm. people are right there with you. There's a character in the show that uses the aisle. She's a homeless woman, and so she's right there beside you.
All right. It's the Five and Dime Theater, now located downtown in a permanent space at 112 East Adams Street. Mm-hmm. Their new show, A New Brain, opens next week, Friday, April 21st, and for one night only on the 24th, you can pay what you want.
Absolutely.
Go to thefiveanddime.org for tickets. Executive Director Lee Hamby, cast member Rodney Holmes. Guys, thanks for being here. By the way, can you stick around?
We would love to be here with you. Yeah, Carrie Speckman.
Yeah, we want some comments from the Peanut Gallery because finally this hour, from Disney on Ice to Adam Sandler and Friends, lots of options for your Easter weekend. Yeah, oh yeah. Here, as she is every Thursday to take us all around town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the woman who will not put her iPhone down, the Spectator.com's Carrie Speckman. This is what Carrie is doing right now. She's taking pictures of my script, the list of events she emailed me last night, because she cannot open it on her phone right now. Yes, you are.
Thank you.
Now, before you go through your list, I want to make a quick plug.
You mean
plug.
My pictures on my phone?
Yeah, the pictures on your phone. I want to make a quick plug for a big WJCT event happening right now through Sunday. It's The Wall That Heals. It's a half-scale replica of the famed Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall in Washington. Actually, at 9 o'clock this morning, they had an opening ceremony right next door to us at downtown Metropolitan Park. And anyone is welcome to come. Spend time at The Wall That Heals through Sunday. So just wanted to make that known to all. Now, with that said, you've got some goodies. You've got a ticket giveaway.
I do. Perhaps you've heard of Disney.
I have heard of them.
Disney on Ice.
I have heard of that too.
It is their World of Enchantment, and it will be featuring some of your favorites. Buzz and Woody, Elsa and Olaf and Flounder and Ariel and that truck with the buck teeth. That's Larry the Cable Guy.
Larry the Cable Guy.
They will be taking to the ice to warm your heart. Yes, aww. I did write that myself.
I know you did. I can see your hand in that and, little witticism there.
It is. There are multiple times. There are like day, afternoon shows, evening
shows.
Oh, yeah,
they do several, yeah.
Yes. Through Sunday. It is at the arena, obviously. We have not one, not two, not three, but four. Four-pack
of Disney on Ice tickets?
Can it get any better?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Well, they don't even have to be family. You can just pick up three people find at a lunch counter.
Uber
right
driver.
Now, yeah, if you want a family four-pack
of... You can take
of...
Lee Hamby. I know he really, really wants to go.
Now,
bring it on.
Let me do this, please, so the people know.
Unimpeachable.
The unimpeachable Kevin Murchard will pick the winner. Mm. Email us now. If you want the family four-pack of tickets to this weekend's Disney on Ice Worlds of Entertainment at the arena, email your request to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will pick one winner at random.
And they're for any night, by the way.
Yeah, any night this weekend. Very exciting. Okay, what else is happening?
You're welcome. comedian John Reap, who won the fifth season of Last Comic Standing. And he also was at, that thing got a hammy? He was that guy in the Dodge.
In the Dodge
commercial.
Ads, okay.
Yeah, he will be at, and that was a really bad impersonation.
get the actor to do
we're
it.
We're going to put you
Rodney.
On stage, Carrie.
I'm waiting, I'm waiting. He will be at the Comedy Zone tonight through Sunday.
Comedy Zone. Comedy Zone.
Call 393.
You know, Fred, the guy that runs the Comedy Zone.
Fred Posen.
He brings in great people.
He does.
Week after week.
Good, he does.
I love Fred. Okay. Now, let's talk about Dream Girls at the Alhambra.
Let's see if we
absolutely love.
I was going to say,
sing it, sing it.
Yeah. We'll make you happy.
Yes.
Yeah, oh.
I only know that one, that Jennifer Hudson power song.
I'm telling you, I'm not going.
I am telling you.
Yep. Yeah, see? What? See, how perfect
keep
timing.
Keep going. Keep going.
I like, and you.
You're going to love me.
I'm very upset that I am not an African-American woman.
that's who you are.
Because
inside.
I want to play that part so bad.
Inside, that's what you're dying to get out.
I'm reincarnated. I was originally a
you were originally
large black
J.
woman.
Hud.
Yes.
Yes, I can see that. Mm-hmm. I get
make
that.
It happen.
I
make
feel
it
that.
Happen, Lee Hamby. Yep.
All right, but it's Dream Girls at the Alhambra opening Friday.
The big gala.
Oh, they're going to have the whole thing. Yeah. AlhambraJacks.com.
Their set is amazing, by the
it's
way.
It's gorgeous.
Oh.
It's pretty, 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 pretty set.
Okay.
Okay, very nice. And it's nice to see you guys supporting all the other theater in town.
Of course.
Very cool. Okay, Saturday and Sunday, the 49th annual Mandarin Art Festival.
49th annual. That's almost as old as I am.
Yes, we all are in that decade now, aren't we?
No.
Yes, we are.
Well, these guys aren't.
Well, AARP no, is right upstairs.
Actually.
They are right upstairs, and believe me, they always get their man.
Oh,
or
they
woman.
Do. They do.
The minute you that birthday hits, they are on
they're
you like
on
white
doorstep.
On rice.
They're on your doorstep.
I have personally experienced this.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
This is a juried fine art and fine craft event. More than 100 artists with their artwork on display and to sell. Also, children's art show, children's activities, various local food vendor options, green market, and more.
Oh, and I'm being asked by the unimpeachable Kevin Murchard to remind all of these many, many people emailing the show right now, you're going to have to come to WJCT to pick up your tickets for Disney on Ice. Okay. Now,
a small price to pay.
All right. What now? Is Adam Sandler coming to town this weekend?
Not only is Adam Sandler coming to town, but Adam Sandler and let me just look
friends.
At my phone.
Adam
here.
Sandler and friends. it's Rob Schneider and
yes.
David Spade, right?
Nick Swartzen, who actually I think is very might be the funniest one of them all.
And you
in
know,
my opinion,
our former producer Sean Birch and his glorious hair. He was like a David Spade.
He was
dead ringer.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Everybody would tell him he looked like David Spade.
That's right. Is he still in Jacksonville?
No, he moved back to the Treasure Coast, but
and he cut his hair.
And he cut his glorious hair.
Stop.
But anyway,
you're
so
killing me.
So Sandler just goes on stage with his friends and jokes around.
I'm not sure how it works, but I think he's like he's the ringleader.
Okay.
Then, you know, the rest of them come out and do their thing and everybody laughs and a good time is had by all.
All right. Now, it is Easter weekend. There's a lot happening, including a big Easter egg hunt at River City Brewing Company. Is that right?
Easter keg hunt.
Easter keg hunt. Sorry.
It's a big...
Wow, even better.
Big difference.
Even better.
How can you not find a keg?
Well, it's a scavenger hunt, and they will be in a 30-block area in downtown, and they will give you a clue, and you have to find all of them, including the golden keg. And I believe the prize is free drinks for a year at River City.
Wow, that's cool. That's Saturday at River City Brewing. Now, this is interesting. The former chair of the Black Panther Party, Elaine Brown, not to be confused with former Jacksonville City Council President Elaine Brown.
Yes.
Very different political person.
Very. Yes.
But she's coming to town, the former head of the Black Panthers.
She is, and the only female to lead the Black Panthers. She is going to talk about the history of the organization. It's a perfect time for this to happen with everything that's going on around a certain park in town. And
oh, Hemming Park, you mean? Sure.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, sure.
But it's also, she's going to talk about building power through community.
Okay. Drive-by truckers with guest host Golden Messenger at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall.
Who I'm sure also our David Spade lookalike, Sean Burke, would be. I'm sure he's a fan of theirs.
All right. And last but not least, it's the big home opener as the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp play the Tennessee Lookouts.
It's not the home opener. That was last night.
That was last night. Sorry. They're playing Sunday.
Opening stand.
Let me ask you guys about this whole thing about what should we call the
Jumbo
mascot for the Jumbo Shrimp.
It's Scampi.
No, it
Scampi
can't be.
Or yeah. Jimbo?
Did they choose Scampi?
Okay, it's Scampi.
Did they choose it?
Pretty sure.
It has to be Jimbo.
I kind of liked Jimbo.
Jimbo is better than Scampi.
I kind of liked Shelly, except then people would think assume it's a girl, but they were spelling it with an E, so maybe it wouldn't be a girl.
Are you saying that the mascot name is officially been
I'm
chosen?
Sure someone can type. Yes, it debuted yesterday. Yeah, Scampi. Somebody look it up.
All right. Let me look this up.
Somebody
right
on
now.
Twitter. Let us know.
Yeah. Tweet the show.
It's pink and furry.
My vote would have been for Jimbo.
Me too.
Culpepper, our sports analyst.
Culpepper would have been a great
it. He thought oxymoron would have been great.
Yes.
For some reason, though, they didn't go for that.
Oh,
I don't know
that's
why.
Good.
That's a solid one.
Yeah.
Somebody has to know.
Mr. Scampi is the dog, Kevin Murray.
It's Sergeant Scampi. I do know that.
Sergeant Scampi is the dog.
Okay, well then, what's the thing?
It has to be Jimbo.
I hope it's Jimbo.
How does nobody... Come on, Twitter.
All right, we'll figure it out. But in the meantime, go to thespectator.com for the full list of events. You could just pull her aside and ask to look at her iPhone.
Or you could go to my Facebook page. All that stuff's already on there right now as we speak, except the name of the mascot. On there.
Yeah, we'll find that out here in a second. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Five and Dime.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Break a leg with your show. And that's our show for today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Murchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. I'm Melissa Ross, and we'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our media roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.